CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com. And call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
On CBS Radio's The Sky. Sky.
Welcome back to Fire It Up with CJ. Today we have author Leslie Morgensteiner, author of the New York Times bestseller, Crazy Love. Make sure to get more shows like this one at fireitupwithcj.com. I'm Cassandra from CBS Sky Radio, and we're going to go right back to CJ and Leslie.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. I'm CJ Liu, and we are talking to Leslie Morgensteiner, who is a Harvard-educated gal who is also a powerful businesswoman, and she married long ago another Ivy League hotshot from Wall Street, and kind of sounds like pretty much the perfect scenario, right?
Yes, well, it was perfect for a little while.
All right, well, there are no Disney moments here because Leslie was in an abusive relationship where her husband poured coffee grounds on her head, pushed her down a set of stairs. And it really wasn't until she was almost brutally beaten to death that she finally decided it was time to end the relationship. And, Leslie, you say in one of your videos that most people want to know, why did you stay? So welcome, Leslie. Why did you stay?
Well, there were a couple of reasons why I stayed, and I think that I have that in common with all battered women. First of all, I had incredibly strong denial, and I didn't realize that I was a battered woman. I know it sounds incredible to believe that, but I didn't think I was an abused wife. I thought I was a really strong, smart woman in love with a troubled man, and that it was my destiny to help him. And I also think that because of my denial, I didn't realize how serious it was and how much danger I was in. And then last but not least, from my perspective at the time, I really loved him, and I knew that if I reported him to the police tried to shine a light on the violence, that the relationship would end. And I wanted the violence to end, but I didn't want my marriage to end.
Mm-hmm. So it was basically love that seemed to me to be the biggest. I mean, when I'm listening to it, it's like love and then just not even knowing that what your scenario was not normal.
Yes, and I wouldn't now, from my perspective now, I would not call it love, and I think it's dangerous to call it love, because it was a crazy form of love, and it really was a psychological trap disguised as love that I fell into, and that in some ways he fell into as well. I think that he was a victim in many ways, too. He had been abused as a young child, and like a lot of abuse victims, he grew up to repeat the pattern, because for him, abuse and love were linked so closely together.
But for you, you seem to have like a very happy, family life beforehand.
I did. And I think that that's part of the misconception about domestic violence. We tend to think that it's only really poor victims or victims who have extremely troubled childhoods who are vulnerable to abuse. But really, everybody is vulnerable. Anybody who has an open heart and is willing to, to fall in love, which is basically all of us, is vulnerable. And my family, we're all very well educated. Many, many of my relatives, including both of my parents, went to Harvard. I grew up in Washington, D.C., and my mom was a teacher and my dad was a lawyer. And I think looking at it from the outside, you would have said this is the last person on earth who's going to be a victim of relationship abuse. But I was a really typical victim. Because, there's no real stereotype that successfully applies to victims anymore.
Right, what made you susceptible was an open heart. made you susceptible?
I think that is what made me susceptible. And I also think that, I think that everybody has a chink in their self-esteem. And that my ex-husband found it. He was very good at sensing people's weaknesses. And he found mine and he exploited it. And the other victims who I've met, and I've met hundreds and hundreds since publishing Crazy Love, they're the same in so many ways that they're optimistic. And that the type of person that is really nice and who's willing to believe the best in anybody and really wants to help other people. It's not that we're saints or angels. It's just you find very few really cynical people who become victims of abuse. They might become cynical because of the abuse, but we don't start out that way.
Right, right. It's the open heart of, like, wanting to think the best of others and giving them a chance and thinking, well, it must be my issue as much as it's other person's issue. So in some ways, that thing that makes you so – that's a wonderful trait, right? But it also seems like that is the your Achilles heel in this particular
case. In my case, it really was. And I also – felt really sorry for him because he'd had such a terrible childhood. And – I think that there are some people who confuse pity with love, and that was a real mistake that I made that fortunately I don't think I will ever make again.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about, you said earlier you were in a psychological trap disguised as love. What was the psychological trap? Was that the, hey, he saw what your weakness was and he went for it? Is that, or what was the trap?
Well, I would say it was kind of what you led off with, that things seemed so perfect at the beginning. You know, we had this Romeo and Juliet fairy tale start to our relationship, and most domestic violence victims will describe their relationship beginning in this way. He just seemed so perfect for me. He worshipped me, and he made me feel really understood and honored and respected as a woman and a writer. And even as a future mom, you know, he really got into the core of my heart, and it felt really magical. I've never felt so close to anybody in my life as I felt to him in the early days. And that was our foundation. So when things started to go wrong and the red flag started to creep up, I didn't want to see them or believe them because I couldn't bear to give up that early fantasy of this perfect love that I had found with him.
Okay, so I want to go loop back to the misconceptions, you think. So people think, you know, well, people who are part of this situation, they're poor, they've had hard family lives. What else do we misunderstand about victims of abuse?
People a lot of times say, well, it's a self-esteem issue, that only a woman with really low self-esteem or a person with low self-esteem would allow themselves to be beaten. And I think in some ways everybody has a little bit of a self-esteem issue. You know, they don't hand out self-esteem the day that you're born.
Right.
And I think that self-esteem has incredibly little to do with it, especially, you know, when you start looking at who is actually abused. And 15 million children are abused every year. And they're not abused because they have self-esteem issues. And they don't hide the abuse because of self-esteem. They hide it because they love their parents and they don't want to get their parents in trouble. And so I think that that's a really huge misconception, is that it's just this simple self-esteem problem. And I also think it's a way of blaming the victim, that, you know, we sort of deserve it because we have no self-esteem and we can't leave. And I think that if there's any blame to be handed out here, we've got to shine that on the abuser and make sure that in our country abusers are forced to take responsibility for what they're doing, which is a crime. That's another thing I didn't know. I had no idea that what my husband was doing to me was criminal and that he could go to jail for it.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that's so interesting, earlier in the month we had another gal who were here who was a mother of a child who'd been abused for her entire life, and she really didn't know any different because she had no other role model. She came from a broken home, so she kind of didn't know. So it wasn't it was one power dynamics that you mentioned before. You're in a situation where you assume that the adult is the person who is in control and knows better and is there to love you. And same thing with your previous husband, right? You're assuming that all these things are true and that, well, this must be how it is because you just don't. No. I mean, and
it's part of trusting and loving somebody.
Yeah.
Is that you kind of, you suspend your critical thinking and your, you know, it's almost the suspension of disbelief that when he started being abusive, I really, everything in me cried out to say, no, it can't be true. He can't be doing this to me. He loves me. I know he loves me. He doesn't want to hurt me. And he would never, you know, fire a gun at me, even though he was holding a loaded gun at my head, you know, something he did many, many times. I just never believed that he would really pull the trigger, and that was a part of the crazy love, that I was victim to, is that, you know, there was a slow building of the abuse. Abusers don't hit you on the first date. It happens very gradually. Mm-hmm. And it usually, by the time that they actually start to hit you, you're trapped in some way. And in my case, I had left my job at 17 Magazine. I had left New York City. We'd moved to a small town in New England. And I was dependent on him physically and financially, in addition to being emotionally dependent. And I really was not in a good position to leave. Mm-hmm. And so he was sort of safer, if you will, to abuse me.
Mm. All right. We have to go on break, but I want, when we come back, to talk to other folks about your transformative story, because in the end the end is happy. It's your,
right.
You got the fairy book marriage.
It does. I have a happy ending, fortunately.
Yes, happy ending. So we're going to be talking about your transformative story, and then I want to also talk about some advice that you give women who are either afraid to stand up or also thinking about leaving and had the same fears that you had about starting your life all over again.
Yeah, that's very important. Great.
Okay, folks. So folks online, make sure to go to www.fireduppwithcj.com and subscribe to get a schedule of upcoming shows, articles, and coaching tips. We'll be right back.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireduppwithcj.com. And call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
On CBS Radio's The Sky. Sky.
Welcome back to Fire It Up with CJ. Today we have author of Crazy Love, Leslie Morgensteiner, here with us on CBS Sky Radio. I'm Cassandra with Sky Radio, and we're going to go right back to CJ and Leslie.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Fire It Up with CJ show. I'm CJ Liu, and we have Leslie Morgensteiner here talking about how she was a victim of domestic violence. And what we're going to focus on today is just get some advice. So for folks out there who either know of someone who is going through a similar type of situation, or in fact you are one of the one in three women, I guess, that are going through a similar scenario. So welcome back, Leslie.
Thank you so much, CJ.
So what are some pieces of advice would you give to, you know, you in your former state when you were too afraid to stand up? What would you want to say to yourself at that time?
Well, what ended up really helping me, the two most important things were, first of all, I started researching domestic violence. Yeah. Even though I couldn't admit that I myself was a victim, I was really compelled to understand it better. And that helped me so much to just learn that what I was going through was something that millions of other people had been through, and that I wasn't a strong woman in love with a troubled man, that I was a victim of a really clearly defined syndrome. Mm-hmm. That helped me. And then the other thing that was life-changing was that I broke the silence and I told two people, two very close friends who I really trusted, what was happening. And that's what I would recommend to other victims, is to learn as much as you can about relationship violence, and then find at least one, but preferably two or three people who are very kind and loving and who you trust, and tell them what you're going through. Mm. Not so that they can rescue you, because that doesn't usually work, but just to break down your own denial, and so that you know that somebody else knows the crazy world that you live in. On average, it takes victims 7 attempts to leave. It's a very hard thing it's hard to end the relationship, and it's hard to leave because the dynamics are so complicated. But it really helps to have other people know what you're going through and to have a greater understanding of what it is that you're experiencing. And when I left my abusive husband, it was 20 years ago, and there wasn't as much support as there is now. But thanks to over 2 decades of the Violence Against Women Act funding, there's a lot more support. You can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline. You can call your local shelter to get advice and legal support and other tools that you need. Police officers are much more aware and understanding of the dynamics now. So the world has changed. It's a much better time to be a victim, if you will. And there's a lot of help out there. But you have to reach out for it and ask for help in order to get it.
Right. So it's like increasing your awareness of the issue, which is the first, you know, part of recovery. And it sounds like the second part is just acknowledging that, or acknowledging and saying, yes, you know, I am someone who has been hurt, and my intention is to change that. And it sounds like that was a point in which you started talking to people and saying, hey.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then I started asking for help from other people. And then something that I did that, you know, every domestic violence shelter recommends as well is that I developed an escape plan. Mm. And for me, what it was, what involved was, it was telling my husband that if he ever hit me again, that I would leave him. Mm-hmm. And making it very, giving him a very clear ultimatum. And then knowing that I was going to follow through on that. Mm-hmm. And my ex-husband actually went for a six-month period without beating me. And I thought that, you know, we had licked it, that the violence was over and that we could rebuild our relationship. But then one terrible, terrible night, he broke down and beat me so badly that I really thought he was going to kill me. And that was it for me. That was, he knew too, that I was ending the relationship. And that was the first time I called the police. And that was my escape plan. And fortunately, I was able to follow through on it. It wasn't easy at all, even though it was so crystal clear that he had the power to kill me. And everybody agreed that if I got back together with him, he might. It still was much harder than you would think. It's just, it's a trap, and it's hard to get out of it.
Is that why you said, earlier you said that it was 7 attempts to leave? Was it because of the trapped feeling of, like, in that kind of dynamic?
Yeah. And it makes it very frustrating for family and friends and even police officers on the outside when you're trying to help a victim, because it takes so long to leave. Because what happens is you leave, and then you get a sense of relief and safety, and you think, he's never going to do it again. It can't happen again. And that's what the abusers say to you, too, that they're sorry and they're never going to do it again. And so you end up going back, and it often takes – some people do leave after the first attack or the first escape plan. They successfully leave. But most people, it takes us a really long time for it to sink in that this is a problem that we cannot solve and that for our own safety and often for our children's safety, we have to leave as well.
So there was a point when you said, I'm going to leave, and then in some of the things I was reading on your blog and posts, you said that you felt like you were damaged goods and broken. And so, and it was probably leaving, you said, was the easier part. Now it was about, you know, how to make a new life.
Right.
What did you mean by that?
And, you know, I think this is a part of the domestic violence paradigm that doesn't get a lot of attention. You think, oh, she's had the courage to leave, now everything's going to be smooth sailing. And it's not. It's very hard. It's often very hard legally, especially if you have children. Mm-hmm. Financially, it's usually hard, too, because part of the control paradigm is that the abuser usually has financial control over you. Mm-hmm. And what happened in my case is that I found that anger was a very good motivator for me. I was really, really angry after the shock had worn off. I was angry that he had abused me. I was angry that I had given my heart to him, that I had supported him financially, that I had done everything for him, and the anger kind of fueled me to not to seek revenge in any way, because I didn't do that, and I wouldn't recommend that. It's dangerous and it's unproductive. But I just was determined to build a new life for myself. And I left the city that we were living in. I moved very far away. I took very good care of myself for years. I had an unlisted phone number, and I had took my mail at a post office box. The company I worked for knew. The security staff knew what he looked like and to turn him away if he ever came looking for me. And I gradually rebuilt my life. And that's another myth that I'd like to explode. I think that many people think victims are damaged goods forever and that we our self-esteem is permanently damaged and we're just going to pick another abusive partner again. And that is not what happened to me. And it's also not what I see in the community of survivors. Mm-hmm. There are many, many of us who learned an invaluable lesson about life and about love and have never been in abusive relationships again. So I think the hope is that if you are patient and you help victims and you help them find their own inner strength, that they can go on, like me, to live really wonderful lives completely free of violence.
What was the lesson that you learned that gave you the inner strength to know that?
You know, that final night when he was beating me so badly and I was unconscious for a lot of it and really, really scared, I just heard this voice in me that said, you know, you can choose him or you can choose you. And the only reason I'm here today is that I chose myself. And that was a great lesson to learn, that I was
more
valuable.
Yeah, I just got chills all over. Wow. That's powerful. And I think that's ultimately what you have to decide, right? Are you going to choose the other person or yourself, whose life is more important?
And I think that's the difference between me now and me when I fell in love with him, is that I always would have chosen him. I would have chosen love, or what I thought was love, over myself. And something I try to teach my kids now is that they are more important, you know, that the relationship you have with yourself is more important than anything else. Mm-hmm. And it was a very hard way for me to learn it, but I have to say I'm really glad I learned it, because I needed to learn it in order to be happy, and my life is so much better now.
Wow. Oh, my God. I'm getting chills all over. Okay, that's truth speaking to you. Wow. That's what an incredible story. It's kind of a spiritual story, right? Because if all of us come to learn a lesson in life, what a powerful lesson that you learned.
It was a spiritual. There were some hellish moments for sure, but over time I've become really accepting of it and glad that I learned what I did from it. And I'm so glad I didn't have children with him. Mm-hmm. And that I was, even though it was hard to leave him and hard to get out, I'm really glad that I was successful in doing so, and that I was fortunate enough to be able to write a book about it and talk so openly about it, because a lot of victims have no desire to do that, and I'm lucky that I can do it.
Yeah, I think that you're lucky, and we're blessed to have you be a voice for people who have been victims, and to offer advice and solace. Like you said, sometimes it's just being aware and knowing that someone, it's not about how smart you are. It's not about how strong you are, because you're a smart, strong person. It's just, this is life. You know, anyone can be victims. And I think you've done a lot to help people expand their awareness of what can happen to someone and how they could fall prey to this. Anyways, thank you so much for your courage. And
Great pleasure. I never thought that this is what I would be doing with my life, but I'm thrilled to be doing it, believe it or not. And I'm so happy that you have, you know, done your part, too, to just shine a spotlight on this, because this is how we end relationship violence, is by talking about it and by normalizing it and make sure everybody knows that it does occur. And that there's nothing wrong with you if it's happened to you, and that there's a lot of help out there.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Everyone have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you so much, Leslie.
Thank you so much.